Another one of the windows into the awakening. That's what I'd like to offer now. There's a few windows, and I'm wondering which window to offer right now. Let's see which one takes your interest.
The round one.
The what one?
The round one.
The round window. It's from the Play School generation. Right? The round one. Different windows in. The Buddha gave lots of different metaphors and ways of seeing it. Go through the round window. Actually, that's lovely. So I'll start with that, and then I'll get technical. So maybe some of you know the poem, and this will speak to your piece as well, from Rumi, right? The round window just reminded me. And he says, the breeze at dawn has secrets to tell you. Don't go back to sleep. You have to say what you really want. Don't go back to sleep. People are walking back and forth at the door where the two worlds meet. The door is round and open. Don't go back to sleep. Like, what happens to your mind when you hear that? The door is round and open. It's open already. You get goosebumps. Yeah. It's one of those ones the mind can't go, okay, so now, you know, tell me what to do next. It's here. It's not in the next moment. It expresses the immediacy. The door is round and open. It's actually right here. That which we seek closer, as they say, than our very breath.
This reminds me of the stupid fly on my window, and I open it wide, and the fly is not flying out. It's still trying to get through the glass.
Okay.
It seems always be good. Go. And it takes a while.
Takes a while. Yes, thank you. That helps me then. I'll choose the door. I've got the doorway. I'll choose the one you're offering about. Closed windows, open windows. So one of the metaphors the Buddha gives for on his night of awakening is a very famous one where he says, and I'm going to do my remembering of it rather than read it, is he says, house builder, you have been seen. Your ridgepoles have been shattered. Your rafters have come apart. No more house building. No more house building. I'm not doing service to the quote completely, but the gist is what he sees is the way that the bondage, the lack of freedom, the sense of separation, of being inside and there's an outside, there's me and the world, there's this and there's that, that is something that gets constructed like a house by the mind, moment to moment to moment to moment, and we don't see we're doing it. So in his waking up, he saw that process. He saw that process of building where as we get more here, as we get the mindfulness deepens, the investigation deepens, the wisdom gets a little stronger, the presence is steady, we can start to see more and more how our mind keeps building a sense of a separate self, moment by moment by moment. And his faculties from practice were clear in that moment, such that he could see the ending of that process didn't have to keep happening, where the closed windows keep coming up, where the sense of the shell, sometimes we feel it like a shell around us of being separate, or just even thin, flimsy veils sometimes, but that sense of losing the intimacy with ourselves and with our world, with each other, there's something that feels separate. So that metaphor of construction, spiritual faculties deepen, there doesn't have to be as much construction. Spiritual faculties, mindfulness, faith, steadiness, the other ones. There's many, many, many qualities, right? As they deepen, the firmness is here. We aren't so bound to have to keep making ourselves in a separate house. And we'll see when we do. So let's make it really practical. How do you do that? How do we do that? How do we start occupying these houses that feel like there's my windows here and you're out there and the best I can do is just have a clear little bit of glass and hi, my world, where actually something in us yearns to be completely free. So this is the one of the wisdom aspects of the path, where we investigate and can see and check it out, even right now, over lunch. Check out your mind. Start to listen to the ways it starts to proliferate. Has anybody not noticed that their mind proliferates at times? And if you look into what's happening when it proliferates, and there's a lovely word in the tradition called papancha, which is a building, it's a construction, it's a key building. The mind proliferates, and before we know it, boom, we're in our own little house with more or less pretty curtains and more or less pretty furniture. And sometimes we might make a house and it's really, 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 really hard in there. Now, when I say this, this is not fuel for your inner critic to go, oh my God, I shouldn't make houses. I make all the wrong houses. I don't even make pretty houses. I make the work, you know, I've got cheap construction materials or whatever it is. This is not that. This is where we have to be really, really right down the center. The wisdom that can start to see that process is absolutely nestled in the compassion and kindness of knowing what it is to be human. This is not an easy ride. Sometimes we might get easy pieces, or some of us might feel like we're born more into angel realms for a little while, rich or easygoing or whatever it is. But the human realm is a realm that rubs, that hurts, as well as being beautiful and all of that. Why does it rub and hurt? Not because we've done something wrong, but because... Any of you think it rubs and hurts because you've done something wrong? Any of you do that with your minds? Like, oops, it's not going well. That must be my fault. Yeah, that's really painful. Not at all. Not at all. So as we investigate this construction business, literally, we don't just want the sharpness and precision, and I'll speak about it, how we can see it and really penetrate that. It has to be in this soft green bed, like green, lush, tender grass that knows, oh yeah, this is the human realm. This is how it happens. It hurts sometimes. So construction. In fact, it doesn't hurt sometimes. It hurts just in the fact that we can't ever find a full security here, no matter how smart we are. It's not designed that way. That's very tender, isn't it, when we wake up to that, that we're objectively helpless in the face of birth and death. When I say that, my windows aren't so steamy, right? The curtains aren't there. It's like, hi, brothers and sisters in birth and death, I'll meet you here. Can we bear that, not because it's bad news, but because that helps us know we're not doing this on our own? It's not my pain because I've done something wrong or made an error or I'm an erroneous mistake, or some of the beliefs that we have about ourselves, can have. There was one monk famous for beginning his talks that way. I don't know if he waved. But. Dear brothers and sisters in birth, old age, sickness, and death. Where does that leave you? Does it make you unhappy? Somebody's nodding. Yeah. Somebody's nodding. It can do. It can do. If we pick that up as like, oh my God. No. That's the human sentence. I knew it was bad. Didn't know it was that bad.
Right. I was just thinking, surely there's quite a lot that goes on between birth and
old. You bet. It's quite a lot that goes on the... Say that again.
You missed out all of that.
What did I miss out?
Well, between birth and old age seems to be there.
Well, hopefully, yeah. Hopefully there is a bit between birth.
Well, there is for a lot of time.
Well, I'm not just talking about time. You know, they it's said that some people...
Experience.
Oh, yeah, lots of experience. Lots of experience, unless it's a really short life. Lots of experience, but the difference between whether that is something that liberates, that experience liberates, or whether it's something where we're either just biding our time, like even right here, any moment we're just biding our time before, oh, it'll be a bit better when I can have lunch or a cup of tea. That's not really having our experience. That's waiting for death, right? It's having lots of experience in between birth and death. Absolutely, let's use it. Let's really use it and wake up with it. So the reflection on birth and death isn't just to say, no, we're all the same in our experience, we're not. But this is our bottom line together. This is what we can agree on, that we'll all have that, those bookends together. And when we simplify it that much, it can actually release a lot. It's not to try and diminish us, it's actually to let us start to open. There's a beautiful story of, I learned from one of the American Dharma teachers one of the workshops on a death row. In a death row jail in one of the states where they still have the death penalty, and these guys, some of them there for years, right? And before they get their date, and this particular prison had a workshop where they were working, doing whatever they were doing in that workshop, and because some of these were guys convicted of tough things, they had heavy, lots of guards on. And over the months and years, they realized actually it was really a fine in there. They needed less and less guarding. It was actually, the atmosphere was something okay, to everybody's surprise. And it became known, and the prison chief or somebody came in to interview and spoke to one of the guys and said, how come it's okay in here? You know, how come it's, you know, there's almost like a good atmosphere in here? And the man said, well, we know, we each know the other one's going to die. We each know that. Something about knowing that can release us from some of our, as they say, some of our pettiness. Or not even pettiness, but some of our preoccupation. So anyway, I wasn't thinking of going to birth, old age, sickness and death. The point is, because we have experience in between, let's use that to wake up while we're in that gap between. So let's make it really practical. When your feet are on the ground, you go get your lunch, you start to walk down the stairs. It might be a reflection of this, like, oh my God, those Buddhists, they're always bloody going on about death. Or whatever it is your mind, whatever it is your mind does. Not you, but that can be this. I remember after some years of teaching, like, oh gosh, they have to go on about suffering again. You know, they have to go. But it's like, whatever your mind does, or start to see where the proliferation goes, right? Not that the reflections aren't valid, not that there isn't some truth there, but start to see who you become, right? The point about the house that the Buddha saw is that he became, when we build a house, we become someone, and there's someone else out there. So, for example, last week, a friend of mine from another country, so a different way of using English, who I teach with, she sent me an email and she said, can we speak on Skype next week? I'd like to have a discussion with you about our retreat design. So we're going to be teaching together, and she wanted to look at retreat design. I saw a house rapidly building on my feet. Design, design, design. Architects, professional, design. Design is something really good. I don't do design, right? I could see these thoughts start to move. She knows about design. I don't know about design. You know, she's better at this. I'm not very good at this. Oh, my goodness. Soon, there was a small potential. I mean, it happens in a flash. Do you see how quickly these things happen? Whoosh! Whoop, there were some little planks and a few little timbers ready for, I am really inadequate. I was about to take shape in a little house. She's really together. Right? It's a very small example, but these things are happening and often below the radar. You might not be, you know, you might not go to the inadequate house. You might go to the super-duper house. But it doesn't make any difference, actually. In the end, it's still bondage. You know, so check those things out. I could see it. Like, oh, look. Wow, just one word. Just one word, different usage of English. And I'm suddenly intimidated in the face of some, you know, older sister type character who's going to tell me how you do this retreat design. Right? Wasn't at all the truth. Wasn't at all the case. But if I start to believe that and live inside that construction, then what would happen? I meet her on Skype, I can't find my words, or I just say, oh, you tell me. Or, you know, I start abdicating from my life. And you know how it goes. Could be the other way around. I could be the right, we're gonna concoct something really good here together, right? And I start, you know, showing up in a different kind of house. You know, I'm the super duper capable, confident one. Maybe sometimes, but if we build a house around it, what's gonna happen when conditions change? Our job's taken away, no one listens to us anymore, we do get sick, or our interest changes, or someone leaves us, or the conditions change. Wow, but I thought I was the really, really, really capable, competent one. This shouldn't be here. I feel really tender right now. I don't feel tender. I'm really together. And we're desperately clinging to who we think we should be, who we were, who others think we are, and there's no freedom in that, right? Freedom, one of the expressions of freedom is that the heart mind, the citta, the word that can be used, this heart mind, becomes more supple, malleable, not to be shaped by what people think of us or what we think we should be, but it comes more supple and responsive, and less needing to find my security in small or big houses. So does it make sense, the examples? And to hear that we're doing it, we need to get a little quiet. You go, oh, look, here's that bit of, oh, they've brought more lunch than me. They got cake. I should have brought cake. Why didn't you? Were just thinking about cake. I've only got right. Good. So what happens when you say that? What's the potential little self that might come up there? Like, right. So it could be that one, right? It's like, oh, they've all, like, all these people who come on retreats, because, right, you're new, they all know to bring cake and serviettes and everything. And I've got a cheese sap. It's like the new girl at school, or that, all those little shapes we can start, and we can start to see it. What happens right now when you see that that's, it's like, oh, bless her, right? We don't have to become it. We can see, wow, just from a cheese sandwich and a cake over there, suddenly, not a big deal, not world-shattering, but places where we keep locating ourselves, right? Or can be the other way around. Now we're doing our walking meditation, just in a flash. Oh, yeah, looking good today. That was a really, yeah, that was just like pure balance, right? And suddenly it's like, mm-hmm, did they see? Right? Could they tell? Could they tell? Right, and we don't have to be down on that. It's very tender. It happens in a flash. It's so human. But the seeing of that is what starts, firstly, to give us the sense of more possibility. So that's where the faith starts to come. It's like, oh my goodness, well, if I'm not that, because that which sees the construction is not so bound already. Right? The faith can start to sort of see through the windows that are bound. And what else? It can also sometimes bring a little wobble of like, oh my God, but if I'm not that, just the new girl, or the great one, or the terrible one, or the bad one, or the best-looking one, or the... Right? Then what am I? Right? What's my refuge? Because, and this is where the compassion is needed, because the refuge that we seek, the security that we instinctively want to... the raft we want to find, the security, the safety we want instinctually as beings, we often try to find in these constructions. Who I am in relation to the others, who I am in the world. So in looking into real refuge and looking into freedom, there is a journey of letting go, there is a journey of relinquishing the places we've gone to for refuge that hasn't been real. And in this case, I'm looking particularly at ideas about self. Now, this is... again, very, very, very precise and delicate territory, because in our journey of awakening, we will also encounter what's called the clarification or the purification of the citta. The old ways and the old pains and the old residues and the things we couldn't handle and experience will come into awareness for us at times, different times. You don't have to look for it. Right, but it will come into awareness at times. This is not the same as necessarily building more houses. There's a kind of deconstructing that is sometimes like a breaking down of old houses. Not a harsh breaking down, not an axe to the wall, not this destroying ego doctrine that's not the path. But something in staying steady, as sometimes pain arises, we feel our feet, we breathe with it, we might make a new house, like, oh, you see, I'm no good, I'm the one who's deficient, I'm the one who's, no. This is what would be called the suffering that leads to the end of suffering, rather than the suffering that leads to more suffering, where it's like, right, okay, can I try and make more houses? So really take good care with yourself as you listen in. So I'll hear the question in a moment. As you listen in over lunch, get curious about what stories your mind is telling you about yourself and the world. That which hears the story is not bound by the story. That which listens to the pain is not, has not become the pain. We might feel the pain. It's allowed to express. And as we become more malleable, it can move. Its nature is to move. So listen in at lunch and see what you hear. And, you know, there's joy in waking up, even if the story we're concocting, and it, again, mind moves faster than lightning, right? The story we're concocting is that we think we're the best one here, the worst one here, all of them are welcome. Sometimes they can be shame, because, oh, I'm not supposed to have that one, you know. Unhooking the shame and listening out. Enjoy your lunch.